Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Wolfpacker Show. My name is Ethan McDowell, and for now, I am the only host of this show. If you tune in every week waiting to see Noah Fleischman and his basketball analysis, first of all, I don't blame you. Second of all, he will be here shortly. This week, we're going to be doing things a little bit differently because it is such a historic week in Raleigh. Both NC State women's and men's basketball are headed to the Final Four. First time in history, both teams have advanced to this Final Four weekend in the same year. Only the 11th time, now 12 with UConn doing the same thing last night. But at the time of their advancement, it was only the 11th time a school had done that. So historic, uncharted territory for the Pack, and a pair of basketball seasons that are full of that. So right now, I'm going to do a little bit of an intro here before we bring on Alan Karpik, a writer from Gold and Black Purdue site on the On3 network, to talk with Noah about the men's basketball team showdown with Purdue in Phoenix, Arizona Saturday. And then later in the show, I will be joined by Chris Wellbaum from Gamecock Central, South Carolina site on the On3 network to break down NC State women's basketball national semifinal matchup with the Gamecocks, the top overall seed in the tournament. So it's going to be a really, really fun day. Both of these teams, to varying extents, have defied the odds to get here. And there's just so many storylines, so many awesome things to talk about. And they are going to be taking on two titans of college basketball this season. But as both teams have said to everyone throughout this run, why not them? Well, we're going to dive into why can't the Pack finish this weekend as national champions? Well, we're going to get into it. We're going to break down both matchups. And without further ado, here are Noah and Alan.
So you're here with Alan Karpik, the publisher of goldenblack.com on the On3 network. Alan, thanks for joining us to talk a little Purdue basketball. You know, from what you've seen from the Boilermakers this year, what's been the most, you know, impressive part about their run to the Final Four?
You know, I think, Noah, the thing that's been impressive has just been Purdue's ability to block out what happened at the end of last year, to be honest, and stay focused, have an edge to them. And, of course, what happened last year was a loss to Fairleigh Dickinson as a one seed, at a 16-1 defeat, and the embarrassment and everything else that went with that. I think that Purdue's ability to stay focused and have that edge has really catapulted to where it's been so far. I mean, there haven't been many hiccups this year with Purdue. There, you know, there've been what, four losses and certain situations, but nobody's run Purdue out of the gym this year. And this team has stayed hungry and a little bit angry throughout the course of the year. So I think that's probably the big thing. It doesn't hurt to have Zach Edey in the middle. There's no question about that. Of course, the guy that's going to be the two-time national player of the year, something that hasn't happened to, you know, in 40 some years. So, but I do think that it's, from a team standpoint, it's just that loss from last year has really kept Purdue galvanized and moving forward.
Yeah. We'll talk about the Zach Edey in a second, but, you know, do you see, I guess, shades of the 2019 Virginia team where they lost to UMBC the year before and were able to turn that into a national championship run?
Well, I think you do, just on the nature of how, you know, again, the embarrassment that Tony Bennett and company had to deal with and being able to do that. I do think Virginia, of course, it was at Purdue's expense in the Elite Eight that year, had, and this is not to minimize the job that they did, but they had some real good fortune, and teams need to do that. Now, so far for Purdue in the NCAA tournament, they haven't had they've kind of made their own luck so far. Now, that may change in Glendale, but I do think that that's still been a model. I think that Matt Painter, Purdue's head basketball coach, talked to Tony Bennett after I think Tony Bennett reached out to him after losing the FDU game, after Purdue lost that game, and offered some encouragement. I think that's still in the back of their minds. I think the path has been a little bit different, maybe, but we'll see. We still have, if Purdue is going to win the whole thing, they're going to have to win two more games, and they're going to have two more very positive experiences to get that done.
Yeah, and you talk about Purdue not having many hiccups, you know, only four losses this year. What's gone awry when they do, you know, have those four losses?
I think Purdue's an existential threat, maybe a lot of it is for a lot of teams, is turning the ball over. And the old number that what is Purdue's record, all four losses for Purdue have come when the Boilermakers have turned the ball over 13 or more times. They have won games. I think they're now 7-4 or 8-4 when they have turned it over more than 13 times. But when you have an offense as efficient as Purdue's is, because you have a Zach Edey and you have very good perimeter shooting, you just got to get the ball up. So it's a very simple thing. You got to make sure you're getting shots, because they're one of the best, if not the best, offensive rebounding team in the country with Zach Edey. If you get the ball at the rim, there's a good chance he's going to get a chance to knock it back in. But I just think turning the ball over, they've had problems at times, Noah, with shooting free throws. You saw that a little bit in the Elite Eight game down the stretch. Zach Edey has had moments. He already shot 71% from the free throw line this year. He has had times, but I would argue that, and I think it's been the general conversation around Purdue, just can't turn the ball over. And if North Carolina State can turn, you know, defensively cause Purdue to make a lot of mistakes, it's going to be in the game.
Yeah, and then when you look at, I guess, this tournament run that they've had so far in these four games, you know, three of them by pretty big margins, and then Tennessee was able to keep it tight. What was Tennessee able to do, you know, to keep Purdue right there with them rather than, you know, let this get to a Utah State where it's 106-67 kind of game?
Dylan Connect, I mean, he was just terrific. He was just hard. Dalton Connect, 37 points, and the ability to keep them in the game in a lot of ways. And Tennessee was a tough matchup. Purdue had played them earlier in the year in the Maui Classic, played in Honolulu this year. They beat them 71-67 in a very, very similar game, though Connect did not have as big a game in Honolulu. But I just thought Tennessee's physicality caused problems. They at times, though Purdue ended up only having 10 turnovers, there at times caused Purdue got some runouts against Purdue. And they're just a good, and Tennessee's just a good basketball team. And when you get to the Final Four, this is what you're going to see. We already know that. When Purdue plays North Carolina State, they're going to see a team that's playing extremely well. So you have a little margin for error, but I think that Tennessee just did a good job making a lot of shots. You know, Purdue was down 11 in the second, in the last third of the first half, and then goes on a run and leads at the half. And I think that also was really good. Purdue was able to keep Tennessee at bay in relative terms, though the game was tied down the stretch, to get the job done.
And then Zach Edey had 40 points and 16 rebounds in that game. For people that haven't seen him a ton, you know, what makes him so good other than being tall and just being, just being 7'4"?
Well, you know, Matt Painter made a point a couple, I think, in the Big Ten tournament, or maybe it was the first round of the NCAA tournament, about talking about those that think he's just tall. This guy has worked so hard at his game. He has excellent footwork. He is 7'4", but he can spin, he can do things around the basket, and he has just been a tireless worker at his shot. There's a lot of narrative, and you're going to hear it, and you've already heard it, about how he gets all the calls or he gets fouled. The fact of the matter is, trying to look at this objectively, the guy just gets fouled, and because he's big. And that is true. He is tall. He's physically imposing. He's not tall and skinny. He's tall and can take up room. That's what's going to make so interesting with him and DJ Burns going head-to-head, assuming they do, or assuming that's the way State decides to play Purdue. But he's just skilled. He's much more skilled than you think. He can usually make free throws, or at least at a 71% clip, and he fouls out the entire team's front lines oftentimes. And Purdue wins a lot of games, Noah, with the battle of attrition. They won it a little bit against Tennessee that way, but they're able to just foul people out, and tends to wear them down from that standpoint. Purdue has shortened its bench a little bit now, where they're really just playing eight guys, but they're very, very confident in those guys in terms of what they bring to the table offensively.
You talk about Zach Edey being a guy that can foul out a lot of teams, you know, forwards. You know, what does a guy like DJ Burns, whoever guards him, you know, have to do to stay out of foul trouble against a guy like that?
Well, I think one of the things that's going to be interesting to see and is what State tries to do in this game, because, you know, do you contest everything? I think there's times, I think it was Seth Davis, somebody had talked about it on one of the March Madness broadcasts about, you know, maybe it was Clark Kellogg, but just talking about letting go. In other words, don't foul if you know he's going to make it. And you can't do that all the time. I get it. But there are times when guys, when he's past you, the game's over. He's going to score. Leave him be. And I think there may be some of that. You know, it'll be really interesting to see, you know, with Burns being a, what, 7 inches shorter now, the width size is going to be difference, but a huge difference maker. But it really is going to be fascinating to see how they do that. He's not really been stopped all year. He had one 10-point game, but it was against Illinois, and it was because Illinois defended him a particular way, and Purdue won that game at home. And the thing that's impressive about Edey is it's just constant work ethic. He just works like crazy. He runs the floor. He gets to the spot. He's all business, and that seems to be the common thread for him so far. It's been that way throughout his entire career, but he's just a tireless worker. And I'm not saying that North Carolina State, because, you know, North Carolina State can slow him down, and they certainly can come up with strategies to defend Purdue. And Purdue has had games where it hasn't shot the three well, didn't shoot the three well against Tennessee, what, 3 for 15. That was a reason why Tennessee was certainly in that game as well. But the length of State against Purdue is going to be really interesting, because that can bother teams defensively. North Carolina State has also done a great job defensively in the tournament and certainly during this run. So, you know, it'll be interesting. But I'm going to guess Edey will get his in some fashion. It's just a question of how much the other guys can really contribute.
It's a good way to lead into it. You know, who are those other guys other than the guy that's one of the most famous players in college basketball outside of Zach Edey?
Well, the other guys are certainly Braden Smith, who was an all Big Ten level point guard and a top five point guard in the country this year, a sophomore guard. Not a real physically imposing guy, very long arms at 6 foot, but extremely quick, extremely fearless, and a very, very good passer. And can score and shoot. And that's been the biggest thing he's done in the last year, is to really improve his offensive ability. He was good as a freshman, make no mistake. He wore down maybe a little bit at the end, but the decree from Matt Painter was, you need to score. We need you to score. Making threes. He loves that pull-up jumper. He's a mid-range shooter, oftentimes one of the best percentages in the country at that length. I think he's been good. Fletcher Lawyer is kind of his running mate. Also has had some ups and downs, but generally has been good in big games. He has been really good. When they beat number one Arizona in December, he had 27 points. He had 27 against Tennessee in the first win in Honolulu. He had a huge game when Purdue won at Illinois on March the 5th, which was a big win to declare to get its own share of the Big Ten championship, and to beat an Illinois team. Sans what we saw in the second half against UConn, it was really a talented team. But I think Lawyer brings, and they have other guys. Lance Jones hit the big shot. He's the only transfer portal guy that's on this team, transferred from Southern Illinois, hit the big shot against Tennessee to give them the 6-point lead with 2 minutes and 20 seconds to go, or whenever that was, that made a big difference for Purdue. And he has been – he's kind of got no memory of last year, because he wasn't at Purdue. He plays freely. He can make some bad shots from time to time, but he has the courage. He shot two air balls in the game against Tennessee that weren't bad shots necessarily. He just aired them, but he had the courage. Braden Smith had the courage to throw in the ball, and Smith made the shot. He doesn't play with fear. Mason Gillis, another guy off the bench, has been a star throughout his career, has been terrific. He did not shoot the ball well from three against Tennessee, but he's one of the, I think he led the Big Ten in 3-point shooting. He's one of the best in the country there, and he's just a tireless worker inside around the board. So Purdue's got lots of weapons. You even go deeper to Miles Coleman, who's a very highly touted freshman who's now kind of worked his way into the lineup and is playing a fair amount. And another one is Camden Heidi, number 23, who at times very athletic, a good defender, He will come in and he will play. That eight-man rotation is what you're going to see from Purdue throughout the course of the game. And the only other guy I didn't mention is Trey Kaufman-Wren, also a guy inside. It'll be interesting to see against State how they use him. A physical guy inside, kind of a back-to-the-basket type guy that can score inside and is physically imposing enough to cause some damage.
This is the first time either of these teams have been in the Final Four in quite a while. How do you think that impacts the game? I mean, you know, Purdue's been one of those teams that's been looked at as one of the best in the country, but haven't been able to finally get to this point. You know, is there more added pressure on the Boilermakers to win?
Yeah, I don't know. That's a great question. I don't know. I think this team, and it's easy to – they seem to be kind of impervious to that. Now, that I'm sure that's not totally true, and they've all talked about what's happened in years past. And now getting to the big stage, I think they're so excited to be at the big stage. You never know exactly, especially in dome stadiums. I get that, you got to make shots in those, in that environment. And I think this would be Purdue's first game in a dome stadium this year, right? So that will be a unique experience as well. But I think both teams, NC State, the age of North Carolina State, the fact and the experience. And the fact that they've held together and dealt with all the things that they have dealt with, being completely counted out of the NCAA tournament, kind of an afterthought, a complete afterthought, at least from my perspective, to what they've done makes them very dangerous. But I don't think either team will be nervous. I mean, outside of the normal stuff that you would expect to play in front of 60,000 folks or how many are going to be there on Saturday. But I do think I don't see that. Purdue's a pretty mature team. NC State, certainly from an age standpoint, certainly what it's been through has been that way as well. So I'm not sure that's going to be a huge factor come tip time at 6:09 on Saturday.
And the last thing we have before we let you go is, what does Purdue need to do or stop NC State from doing to win this game and get to the national championship game?
Kind of going back to that whole turnover thing and making sure that it gets shots up. DJ Burns is going to be what he is, and I'm sure will do well in this game. And the other DJ that has played so well in the tournament. You know, you just don't want to have, if you're Purdue, somebody that has been a little bit of a surprise or come in and hit seven straight threes on you. I suppose that's stating the obvious. You don't want the other team to score more points than you. Simple as that. But I think that there's a tremendous amount of respect. Matt Painter, I don't think there are a few coaches in the country that respects the opponent more. He'd be silly not to, based on what the Wolfpack have done over the last few weeks. And Purdue will – I don't anticipate Purdue will look past anything, because I think partly because it had to struggle so much mentally to get here. And I don't see them – it doesn't mean they're going to – I'm not guaranteeing a Purdue win, and I'm not a better, so I don't really worry about whatever the spread is. But I do think that I don't see Purdue – I think you're going to get a good effort from Purdue, and I think it's going to take a good effort for NC State to win. That states the obvious, but they've been putting a lot of good efforts together throughout this unbelievable stretch.
For sure. Well, NC State and Purdue tip off on Saturday at 6:09 Eastern Time, 3:00 local in Phoenix. Alan, appreciate you joining me.
All right. Thanks so much. Sure enjoyed it. Who would have thought NC State and Purdue, but it's going to be a lot of fun come Saturday night.
That it will be. Thanks, Alan.
Hey, everyone. Ethan McDowell here for a quick break between our two preview segments of this show. I hope you learned as much from Alan as I did about Purdue. And it's going to be an interesting matchup. It's going to be a lot of fun to watch that game. I'll certainly be tuned in from Cleveland Saturday, and it'll be an exciting matchup for sure. Before I get into my conversation with Chris, I want to say a quick thank you to our sponsor, Game Time. Game Time is a ticket buying and selling marketplace, whether you're looking for Final Four tickets, whether you're looking for Hurricanes tickets, Durham Bulls season starts up soon, so go check them out. You can find them on the Game Time app too. If it's a concert, a comedy show, any sporting event, you can find it on Game Time. You can find the Game Time app on any app store, or you can get it on your web browser at gametime.co. My favorite thing about it by far is when you go on there, you can see the exact view of this from the seat that you'd be sitting in. takes a step out of the ticket buying process. You don't have to go to another site to look up PNC Arena seating chart and do that whole thing. They've got it all in the app. I was just looking at tickets for this Capitals at Hurricanes game right now. Cheapest ticket to get in is $68. And if you would like to go, you can open the app and you can see the exact view from the seat you'd be sitting in. I'll hold it up for those watching on YouTube. But yeah, there you go. You can see it right there. It's very nice. If you do choose to check it out, use code WOLFPACK, all caps WOLFPACK, when you check out, and you'll get $20 off your first purchase. So that sweetens the deal a little bit. And yeah, so go check it out. Game Time app on any app store, or you can find it on your web browser at gametime.co, not .com. All right, here's my conversation with Chris. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Wolf Packer Show. My name is Ethan McDowell. Thank you all for tuning in to our Final Four preview special. And now I'm joined by Chris Wellbaum from Gamecock Central. He covers the women's basketball team for On3 site, or from South Carolina's site on the On3 network. We're bringing him on the show today to, you know, preview this matchup, preview the national semifinal showdown between the Wolfpack and the Gamecocks. Chris, thank you for coming on the show today.
Thanks for having me. It's good to talk to you.
So obviously, you know, South Carolina, they're the standard. Every year in the past, you know, decade almost at this point, they are the standard of women's college basketball. They have the best coach in the country in Dawn Staley. They're a perfect 36-0 overall, 16-0 in a challenging SEC conference, and they have not lost since the Final Four last year. So everyone knows about South Carolina, Chris. Everyone knows that they are, you know, they've sat atop that AP poll the entire season. They are the undisputed number one team in the country, number one overall seed in the NCAA tournament. What makes this team special, this year's Gamecock squad special, in your opinion?
I think it's a couple of things. One is they're playing the nobody expected us to be here card a lot, which it's true, no one did, but it's hard to say that when you're going against NC State, who really no one expected to be here. But they just have they have really good chemistry, and we knew they had talent, but most of us figured they'd take a while to find their stride if they did. Mm-hmm. So we were thinking, yes, being ranked sixth to start the season is probably about right. But they found their stride by halftime in the first game in Paris. And they can be very undisciplined at times. Dawn has said several times that they drive her crazy, but they, excuse me, they just get along great. They play off of each other so well. They root for each other. They're unselfish. They mesh well, where you have, you have one player's strengths or another player's weaknesses, so you can kind of mix and match. And Dawn has recruited incredibly well. I think they've been the top. She signed the top two, first or second, excuse me, ranked signing class in something like four of the last five seasons. Mm-hmm. So, and obviously there's been some attrition. Sanaya is now at NC State, but still she just keeps reloading and reloading with players. She's gotten very picky about who she signs. And that's part of the reason the chemistry is so good, is that she's reloaded with players who want to be a part of her program.
Yeah, absolutely. And it shows, because you're right. Like, I tuned into that season opener and they absolutely dispatched Notre Dame, a team that, you know, NC State blew out in the regular season, but then the Fighting Irish came back and beat them in the ACC championship. So a very, very good Notre Dame team, but they won that game 100-71 in Paris. So, and now we're here a few months later in the Final Four. It's been a long road. I want to get kind of into last season compared to this season. Obviously, this is where South Carolina season ended last year. After Caitlin Clark went off against them in a huge performance in the Final Four. You've talked about them playing the no one expected us to be here card. And, you know, there's validity to that, because it's hard to make back-to-back Final Fours. In your opinion, what about last year's team is different than this year's team, and why could this be the South Carolina team that returns to the mountaintop in the national championship?
There's I think two key differences. One is that there was an incredible amount of pressure on last year's team because everyone expected them to be here, and everyone, I mean, we were talking about whether they could go undefeated before the season started. Mm-hmm. So, and then there were some other things. They got kind of swept up in some narratives that became a distraction, especially with a certain segment of the population who tends to see things along the racial line. And so they felt pressure because of who they were to perform in a certain way. And they were tight. By the end of the season, it was a relief when they won. They weren't happy when they won. They were relieved because there was so much pressure on them not to win. This team doesn't know any better. They're oblivious to what's going on outside of them. They hear it. They know to some extent that there's these other narratives out there. But for the most part, Don called it a daycare, and really are just all nuts. And when you have a group of 10 people who are nuts and you put them in a room together, that just makes them even worse. So part of it's they play much freer emotionally than last year's team. And you look at something like Camila Cardoso hitting the game winner against Tennessee.
They
didn't know that they were supposed to lose that game. It sounds silly, but they're like, okay, so we got to hit this three with 1 second left. Okay. And then the other difference is the team last year was constructed in a very almost like 1990s NBA fashion, where you have your point guard, shooting guard, small forward, power forward, center. Everybody had a position. And they didn't have a lot of flexibility in the roster. But when you have Aaliyah Boston, why do you need flexibility? You want her to be the center and build around her. And obviously, you know, it worked. They won 36 games. So it's not a shot at that. It's just the difference between last year and this year. You've got a point guard, you've got a center, and then you've got six or seven athletes that can play two, three, four positions. So if something starts to go wrong, they're able to substitute and change their style of play to fit what's happening. They've had to win games by scoring. They've had to win games by locking down on defense, playing in the half court, and pounding it into Cardoso. In the Elite Eight, nothing was falling, so their eight or ninth player, depending on how you do it, off the bench comes in. They draw up a play for her. She ad-libs off the play because it was shut down. Tessa Johnson, and hits a three-point play in the lane that clinches the game. Yeah. So they just have so much depth and versatility that if someone has a bad game, there's someone else that can step in. Or if you shut down one thing they're trying to do, they can adjust. Last year, they couldn't always do that.
Okay, got it. That makes sense. That honestly sounds a little bit similar to NC State from last season to this season. There's definitely some parallels there where, State, if they need to play small, they can play small. If they need to feed their center River Baldwin for a half like they did against Texas, mm-hmm. they can do that. And so I think I don't know about you, man, but I'm really excited for this matchup. I think it's going to be a really, really good game.
I'm thrilled for Westmore and NC State. They've, had really bad luck a couple of years ago with that great team having to go up and play at UConn, and they just, they always do things the right way, and so it's nice to see them get rewarded. And actually, Dawn was talking about Sanaya Rivers today and how she's still part of the family, and they still wish her luck. And I talked to a few of the players the other day, and I was actually watching the Texas game with Sanaya Fagan in the locker room, and she was looking at it, and she just goes, yeah, they're going to win. They got this.
That's awesome. Well, so you mentioned Camila Cardoso, dominant senior, 6'7" center from Brazil, just a really, really impressive player, leading the team in points at 14.1, rebounds at 9.4, and blocks at 2.5. So she obviously, you know, stands out when you look up South Carolina women's basketball. I want to ask you about the other players. Who else should Wolfpack fans be looking out for Friday evening to make a potentially game-changing contribution?
There's a lot.
Yeah.
I always say Cardoso is a walking mismatch just because there aren't 6-7 players who can run the court as fast as her. But one of the things that makes her so tough is that she's got Ashlyn Watkins backing her up, who is a sometimes starter and could start for probably all but two or three other teams in the country. She's phenomenal. She's only 6'3". I say only, but she's the one that can dunk. She can jump out of the rim. She makes plays that you just don't see in women's basketball. And the ability to rotate Cardoso and Watkins is what makes both of them even better. Tahina Pau-Pau is a big threat, shooting just under 50% from three. She had an off game in the Elite Eight. I think she was 1 for 7. So she's due to even out that percentage. And then Malaysia Fulwiley off the bench is another one that she had a couple of subpar games in Albany, but if you go back and look at what she did against North Carolina in the second round, she was just by far the best player on the court. She won tournament or SEC tournament MVP. She's another one that she can do things that you just don't see other players able to do. She's so quick with the ball. She's so fast. She started out the season as a defensive liability, and she's become an outstanding on-ball defender who can really disrupt the opposing team.
Awesome. Yeah, you've talked about the balance, and you know, NC State's one of the teams in the country that really prides itself on, like, hey, anyone can get going on any given night. All five of their starters average double figures, plus freshman Zoe Brooks is right under that mark as well. And, I mean, South Carolina, it's a similar story. It's six players averaging at least 9.3 points per game. And it's there's going to be a lot of talent on the court in Cleveland Friday. And that's really exciting. So, obviously, Chris, they're 36-0. Like, they haven't had a bad game yet because they haven't lost. But there have been moments like, you know, that game against Tennessee – or blowing the lead against Oregon State, that, of course, they still rallied to win that one. In the few games this season where they have looked a little bit vulnerable, are there any common threads between those games? Are there any issues that are consistently causing this team issues?
They've had issues with turnovers, and it's not an issue of what the defense does. It's they'll have games where they just lose focus.
Okay.
And just start turning the ball over. They had 24 against Texas A&M in the SEC quarterfinals. They had 23 against Utah early in the year. It's something where if it starts happening, they aren't able to really shut it off. But the biggest thing when they were nearly blew the leads, sometimes they lose focus. And there are times when things come so easily that they think they can just run down court, throw up a shot and score instead of being patient, working through their offense and getting the right shot. One of the things against Oregon State was they just couldn't hit a shot. They were getting the good shots. They were being patient and working through their offense, and they were getting the shots they wanted. They just wouldn't fall. Everybody has those games, and yet they somehow figured out a way to win. But yeah, the lack of focus when they get big leads has been a concern at times this season.
Got it. Yeah. I think that has, again, I there's just a lot of common threads here between these two teams. I think that's another thing that not so much in the tournament. I think NC State has done a really good job in the NCAA tournament, but you know, they had a 7-point lead in the fourth quarter against Notre Dame in the ACC title game, and they've blown some leads before as well. So, you know, just another common thread connecting these two teams. It's going to be a really fun one. Before we get out of here, I did want to ask just, I know you were just in Coach Daly's press conference. Mm-hmm. So just wanted to see how that was. How is she feeling about the matchup? Were there any big takeaways you took from hearing Coach Daly talk?
She told a neat story that I don't think any of us would have known about otherwise. She obviously has the one of the perks of being the top overall seed is you get your first choice of hotels. So I don't know which hotel they're in. A lot of times they don't reveal that for security reasons, but they're in a nice one. And Staley got the corner room, and she said it was huge. And all the players wanted to come see how big the room was. So the whole team crowded into her room, and she said, well, there's room for them, first of all. So I was thankful for that. And then she looked around the room and looked at all of them and said, thank you. Thank you for this ride. I never thought we would be here. Never thought this season would go the way it did. Thank you for getting me here. So that was a really neat story.
Yeah. I mean, obviously they're going to be intense competitors on the court Friday, but I think, I'm obviously a huge fan of Coach Daly. I think every NC State fan you could talk to would agree with me there too. So really excited to see these teams compete. And Chris, one last question for you. If you had to pick one or two keys to this game, something that you would like to see South Carolina focus on to beat NC State, what would you choose?
And I reserve the right to change this later in the week. Absolutely. But turnovers are always the first key with South Carolina because they're a different team when they protect the ball. That's a tough one. Probably 3-point shooting, because it's the when South Carolina is hitting its shots, they're unstoppable, and they're first or second in the nation in 3-point shooting. That's why they're undefeated. It wasn't there against Oregon State, but it didn't cost them. So I think if the shots start falling again, they'll be in good shape.
Got it. All right, Chris, that is all from us today. I really appreciate you joining the show and taking the time out of your evening to talk about this.
Thanks for having me.
Are you headed up to Cleveland?
I am. I have to get up at like 1 o'clock in the morning to drive up to Charlotte and catch a flight.
All right. Well, safe travels up there, and I'll see you there. Thanks for coming on.
All right. Thank you.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.